Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Garibaldi Red podcast. As Forest lost 3-1 to Tottenham Hotspur, which leaves them just outside the relegation zone on goal difference. The same team selection for once, a bit of consistency. Another Chris Wood goal, a Chris Wood missed chance, which could have changed the game. And a little bit of a poor second half performance from Forest. Joining me to discuss that, and I'm sure lots more. And we were just talking about trains before we came on air. It is Sarah Clapson, Reds correspondent and Forest fan and regular to the podcast, Steve Bennett. Good morning to you both. Steve, let's start with you. What was your train last night? What was your train like last night? And what time did you get in? Because it was a late
The train itself was great because it was mostly empty, because obviously most Forest fans were getting on the King's Cross trains back up to Nottingham, but where I come back up to home in Stoke, it's just that, you know, it was a 9:30 train that was delayed by about 15, 20 minutes. But as I just said, you know, it did get in just over 15 minutes late. So I'll be able to claim a tenner back or something, on which will contribute to my next away ticket, no doubt.
Maybe we should turn this into a train podcast. We could do a podcast about claiming compensation from trains, but that probably isn't an area of expertise. Sarah, you got in late as well last night, but let's start with your reflections on the game. What did you make of it yesterday? Kind of a bit of a slow start again from Forest, really got going with the Chris Wood goal, had the momentum then into half time, and then kind of just went downhill from there, didn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, Nuno pointed out afterwards about two kind of key moments in the game that didn't go Forest's way. There was the chance for Chris Wood after he'd equalised. Had that gone in, had Forest gone 2-1 up, would have been a completely different match. And then the moment with Maddison just before the break, again, had the incident gone a different way, different second half, and who knows what might have happened. I thought there was some positives to take. A spell in the first half where Forest looked really good going forward, got on the front foot, real attacking threat. That trio of Morgan Gibbs-White, Anthony Elanga and Callum Hudson-Odoi and Chris Wood up top looked really good, really positive. The fullbacks got forward well. Came after a bit of a slow start, but it was a good response to falling behind, having got back into the game, having then got going again. And you kind of thought, got to half time at 1-1. If they can keep that going in the second half, there was definitely a chance there of coming away with a result. Tottenham, though, have a lot of quality. And where Forest didn't make the most of their chances in front of goal, Spurs did. And that kind of took the game away then. Two goals in the space of, I think it was about 6 minutes. And then 3-1 down, it becomes a real uphill battle, a real challenge. And it was... it was a different second half to how you thought it might pan out at one stage. Defensively, yeah, just a little bit fragile at times, but still some positives to take, I think.
Yeah, and I think it kind of showed the quality of a top six side, really, in Spurs and really where Forest were, well, Forest are and find themselves in the league. I think it kind of shows the difference of quality. Steve, what did you make of it from the away end? You made the trip with lots of other Forest fans yesterday. Heard you on the TV, loud and proud. I'm sure it wasn't you just singing.
To be honest, I pretty much agree with your comments, Sarah. I mean, I thought we started a bit slowly, but don't we ever? I think we were a bit unlucky with the own goal, but there were three defenders around the ball. They had to do something. There was a player coming in at the back post. I think it might have been Brennan Johnson. I'm not sure. So, you know, you go down to that. But I thought it was remarkable that we equalised. But we were playing pretty well. And I thought we looked at that stage. There was a real confidence in the side. It was almost as though, you know, having had the result on, when was it, Wednesday night against Fulham and that unbelievably fantastic first half and then held out in the second half, there was a real belief across the team. I think the thing that changed the game was not Chris. I mean, you know, it's difficult, isn't it? Chris Wood missed what, relatively speaking, was an easy chance, but without him, where on earth would we be? And we all make mistakes every day. So, you know, all great credit to him for scoring the first. The change in the game for me was was the decisions that Ange Postecoglou made at half-time. And when you bring on Bentancur and Højbjerg to completely shore up and change the midfield, that for me was the difference, because they then looked much, much stronger. They had that solidity in midfield. It enabled them to, I mean, they play very wide with, you know, Timo Werner and Brennan Johnson on either wing. And it allowed them to draw people into the middle, play the ball out wide to the wingers. And let's be honest, both goals, it would have been very difficult to do anything about. I mean, that first shot, you know, the edge of the box into the top corner, you don't stop that. Madison's little flick for the third goal and the way the third goal was taken was really good. And I think sometimes you just have to go, they were really good goals. My disappointment is, what did we do to try and combat that? Nothing. Because I'm beginning to question Nuno's decision making and the timing of his decision making. But I think also you've got to be fair and say, our bench in comparisons to Spurs' bench, there is no comparison. And at that point, we looked the sort of team that we actually are, which is at best a bottom half team with the resources of a bottom half team. And Spurs have that luxury of having been established in the Premier League for a long time. I mean, it's a magnificent stadium. Goodness me, imagine playing there every week. But they've got the resources to make significant changes to the game, and we don't. We bring on the players that we bring on. I mean, I thought Dominguez did well. I thought Reina did well for the 10 minutes he was on, showed flashes of, you know, of real excitement. How on earth as a club have we got to the stage of basically having one striker? Because I'm sorry, but who persuaded Origi to stay at the end of January? Major mistake. How can we have a situation where we're relying completely on Chris Wood, playing really well, delivering the results? Taiwo's injured. We haven't got another striker. How can you be in the Premier League and only have one striker? So for me, there are some real question marks about the club, about the way we've handled recruitment, about the way we've prepared for this season, and the expectation of, you know, if we do what we've done before and we'll be a mid-table team, it just doesn't work like that. Everybody knows about second season syndrome in the Premier League. How could Forrest not have been aware of it?
Yeah, it's a good point, Steve. Just picking up on the back of what you said there about kind of Nuno and maybe you're kind of starting to question his decision making. The substitutions I felt were a little bit strange, and I almost felt as soon as Tottenham got the third, well, hang on a minute, Nuno knows that we're not going to get anything from this game. He's given up in a way slightly. Let's take, you know, a few players off. Let's give them a bit of a rest for a huge game against Wolves next week, which Forrest on paper are more likely to go and win. It's at the City Ground. It's a lower half team. No disrespect to Wolves. They've done great this season. But what decisions were you questioning? Was it the substitutions? Is it starting 11? Is it playing certain players? What's made you almost question him recently, Steve?
Well, I think he's played some players out of position. I mean, I go back to that game when he played, I can't remember which one it was, when he played Nyakati at left back. And that was a complete disaster, clearly.
Villa.
And Nyakati, was it Villa? Yes, I think it was. So. And Nyakati's never a left back. But some of his substitutions, if you're going to take off Gibbs White because he was struggling clearly with, I mean, heaven forbid he's picked up a hamstring injury, but when he chased back to tackle Werner, he clearly pulled something and then wasn't himself for the next 10 or 15 minutes. And you've got somebody like Reina on the bench, and you know that Gibbs White is hurting Spurs in the middle of midfield because of his creativity. He took Gibbs White off and Wood off. I'm assuming Wood was a precaution, or maybe he was looking a bit tired. Origi for Wood, I understand, but I don't understand taking off Gibbs White and then putting on Dominguez, because that's not keeping the shape of the team and keeping the momentum of the team. We have a ready-made replacement for Gibbs White in Reina, so make that decision, which was then demonstrated in the last 10 minutes when we started to attack a little bit. Maybe Spurs were sitting back, but Reina showed the same sort of flashes of intelligence and creativity that Gibbs White shows. Dominguez is a replacement for Yates, and actually I would probably have made that switch, because, I mean, there was a fantastic article, I'm sure you've both read it, in The Athletic this week about how Forest have had a homegrown player or somebody from them for, was it 4,049 games or 50 games now? Against a team like Spurs, Yates is going to struggle, because they've just got better quality players, and Yates is a disruptor. He'll be perfect for Wolves. You know, he's perfect for that sort of game. Dominguez has got a little bit more about him to make that switch. So I just question some of the actual decisions, but also the timing. As soon as Spurs have made that switch at half-time to bring on really experienced, different sort of players like Bentancur and Højbjerg, you've got to respond to it. You can't just keep doing the same, because we lost the momentum. We lost the initiative. They scored twice in 6 minutes. The game was over. My concern then was, you know, as I'm sure others did, flipping out how close is our goal difference to Luton at the moment, and is this going to end up 4-1, 5-1, 6-1? And then we'd be in real, you know, that goal difference might save us ridiculously.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point, Steve. What was the latest on Morgan Serra? I didn't really hear much from Nuno after in his post match interview about him. Obviously, did they take him off because he was injured?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as he came off, he put an ice pack on, and he went straight to the bench. He didn't look, as Steve said, he didn't look particularly comfortable. Hopefully, it is a precaution. They said they'll assess him. Obviously, no midweek game this week, so he'll have a few extra days. I mean, they can't afford to lose Morgan Gibbs-White. He's the main man, really. He makes everything tick. So if there's any doubt about him during a game, then you can understand Nuno bringing him off straight away. Same with Chris Wood. Can't afford to lose him at the moment. So I think that one was also a precaution. It did affect the game. And I think Steve makes a really good point about not responding to the changes that Spurs made. Because that... Spurs had been on the back foot for the end of the first half.
Yeah.
Those changes flipped the momentum around. And then the onus is on Forest then and on Nuno to respond to that again. And you're right, they didn't. I think the substitutions are always difficult. He's had a bit of criticism in recent weeks, Nuno, for his starting 11, for his subs. I can understand his starting 11, wanting to go with the same team that did well against Fulham, because you want consistency, you want continuity. Yep. It's something we've spoken about a lot. So I don't think you can pinpoint that, but I would have taken Yates off a lot sooner. He was on a yellow card. He was on a yellow card really early on.
After 14 minutes.
Exactly. That affected his game. His game, he's getting stuck in. It's getting under the skin of the opposition. And when you're on a booking with a long way to go, he's having to hold back. He can't do what he does. So I don't quite understand why he was kept on as long as he was, particularly when Dominguez was there and you could bring him on and make that switch and it wouldn't necessarily impact the game to any great extent. So I do have sympathy, because substitutions are really difficult, but that's what Nuno's paid for. That's his job. You're not going to get them right all the time. Not every manager gets them right all the time, but you do have to respond to things in games. And I'm not sure that particularly happened yesterday.
I don't think it did. A few comments coming into us live this morning. Richard says going to a top four team was always going to be very tough. We should worry if we lose against the likes of Wolves, Sheffield United and Burnley. Michael says panic subs yesterday. Barry says Yates is a liability, giving crucial fouls away. I think it was 6 fouls yesterday. Yeah, I read a stat. It was something like 4 fouls in 5 minutes or something ridiculous like that. And Roy Keane was talking on Sky, and we'll get on to the minor incident in a minute with VAR and him and Maddison. But Roy Keane was talking about he's a player that likes to dish them out and receiving them. He can't really expect Forrest to maybe get be on the right end of that VAR decision, shall we say. We'll touch on that in a moment, but we'll touch on Ryan Yates first, Steve. He's a player that does bring a lot of... It kind of creates a bit of a divide in the fan base, and there is that whole factor around him of him being an academy graduate, and as you referred to that article this week as well. but yesterday really probably wasn't the game for him. And he did have a bit of a shocker. You could almost tell in the first 5 or 10 minutes, this wasn't a game for Ryan Yates. And right there, right then, Nuno should have probably seen that he was in danger and the midfield was probably going to be overrun.
Yeah, I mean, let me be clear. I'd have Ryan Yates in my match day squad every single week. But I'd make a decision about whether it's a team to play him against or whether it's a team to bring him on against. And a team like Spurs, who are smarter, cuter, more experienced, more skillful, I wouldn't have started him. I mean, I understand perfectly carrying on from Fulham and picking the same team. But I think somebody like Dominguez would have been able to handle a player like Maddison. Because what was clear was Yates was on the pitch to shadow Maddison and have a go at him and try and wind him up. There was lots of vitriol about Maddison in the crowd, and I understand that, but Maddison's a pretty good player. You know, he's had injuries and he's not played all season, but, you know, they, in the same way as they've spent money on Brennan Johnson, they've not spent money on Maddison simply to throw it away. He's a very good player, and he controlled a lot of what was going on in midfield. I think where we got away with it a little bit in the first half, it was almost as though Spurs, you know, the Arsenal of old, they wanted to walk it in. The difference in the second half was they took shots from long range, and guess what? They scored a couple. But Yates, I mean, aside from the fact that Yates is, you know, is one of our own, and he's the only now one of our own, I think he's perfectly good enough to be in the squad. But if you're one all with 20 minutes to go and you're battling and you need to bring in a bit of disruption, perfect player to bring on the pitch. Because everybody knows what he's going to give you. And he's done it through sheer effort and attitude, less so in terms of ability. But you can't criticise him for that at all. And I know there are sections of the fans who think he's, you know, useless, and that's being polite. He's not useless. He's a really good player. And there are lots of teams in the Premier League that would snap him up. But it's about getting the best out of him and every player. And that, for me, then, I'm afraid, comes back to Nuno. And by now, he ought to know all of his players in detail, I think, and he ought to know their strengths and maybe their weaknesses and know exactly when to play them and how to play them. You know, he ought to know his best 11 by now, or his best 14, let's say, so 11 and three subs. And I'd have Yates in there, but yesterday wasn't the right game to play him against the quality of Spurs midfield.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think often fans that kind of go too far with criticising him, I think you have to remember that out of all the managers and head coaches that he's worked under, Forrest, he always gets a look in, which I think says a lot and kind of speaks volumes. And Roy Keane was talking on Sky yesterday. I think he's kind of been quite open about kind of Roy Keane got to know Yates quite well while he worked for a brief period of time with Martin O'Neill as the assistant manager, and speaks volumes of him. But I agree, Steve. I think there is games where, you know, he just isn't suited for it. And I don't think yesterday was one of those. And Sarah, let's reflect actually on that kind of, I wouldn't say a turning point in the game, but another talking point. Nuno referred to it in his post-match interview with Sky about Maddison's foul. Some people calling it punch. Is that serious foul play, in your opinion? Is that another one where Forrest have been let down by VAR? Is it another letter going to PGMOL? They must have the address by memory now.
Well, I think they should have looked at it. I think the referee should have been sent to his monitor to look at it. Whether he then deems it a red card is a different matter. But not to point him in the direction to say, look, there's been this incident, go over check. I think you can understand why Forrest were really frustrated and not very happy about that. I mean, he definitely jabs him. It's soft, but I mean, you can see where Forrest are coming from for sure. And I mean, Yates quickly went down and he made the you know, signal, go check the monitor, and he was pretty frustrated about it all. If he'd have been sent off, it would have been a different game. So you can say it's a turning point, because those kind of decisions in big games like that against teams like Spurs, they have a massive impact. going up against a 10-man Spurs team, second half's a different story then. I think it's one of those that if it had been the other way round, with Ryan Yates on a yellow card, if he'd been the one that jabbed at James Maddison, I think probably it would have been a red card going his way. And that's maybe where the frustration lies, that you kind of feel it was a little bit hard done by from Forest's perspective.
Yeah, I know what you're going to say, Steve, about controlling the controllables. I'm just getting deja vu and flashbacks to a few weeks ago. I was sat in this exact spot, and I'm just getting flashbacks. But Sarah does make a good point there, Steve. And it is almost like every week there's a set piece that Forest concede. There's a slow start. There's a sluggish start. We sit too deep in an away game. There's a dodgy VAR decision, and we're talking about the same things. And it's just been a long old season with it. And we're almost getting to the point now. I kind of don't know about you, but even with a decision like that, you're just like, oh, do you know what? Forget it, because I'm just getting sick and tired of talking about it every week.
I think it's a red herring. I don't think it was a red card. I think at most he might have got booked, but of course the ref, having not seen it, you can't go to VAR for a yellow card. So the thing becomes irrelevant and therefore get on with the game. I think it was Ryan Yates doing a Ryan Yates and trying to wind up James Maddison and trying to create more out of it. And that's part of his game, and we've got to applaud that. But Ryan Yates was on the pitch yesterday as captain, and therefore old-fashioned school, is that the right example? I mean, I'd like to talk about another point where when Ryan Yates got substituted, he didn't know who to give the armband to because Gibbs White had already gone off. So I don't know if you saw this, Sarah. He looked at everybody, he took the armband up and he threw it up in the air.
I think there's four different captains on the pitch.
Eventually Nico Williams picked it up. And then when Nico went off, and I think there might be another injury there, he looked round and Elanga came and picked it up. Now, again, if you're the manager of a team, you know who your leaders are. If you're the team, you know who your leaders are. How can we have a situation at game, whatever it was, 32 of the season, where Ryan Yates goes off and there's nobody actually to take that armband as opposed to Ryan Yates chucking it up in the air? What does that tell you about the leadership within that group, the leadership within, I mean, it's going too far to say the leadership within the club, but the leadership within the group. Okay, Nico Williams picked it up. Nico Williams is 22 and plays for Wales. I mean, he might be 23, but he's a youngster. What about, you know, Dominguez, I'm pretty sure was captain at Bologna. He could have had it. Yeah, you know, Dominguez could have had it. Who else was there? I mean, there was nobody really senior on the pitch at that stage. But that, again, says something, I think, about the way that we've been set up for the season. And for me, it's coming home to roost. I mean, let's go back 24 hours. I'm sitting on the train going down to London yesterday and thinking, do I expect us to get anything from Spurs? My head tells me no. My heart says it would be wonderful. If we can get away with a draw, great. But it's a no-lose situation. Spurs, if they win, they go into the Champions League spots. We are where we are. So I went to the ground not really expecting anything other than a nice day out and the privilege of going to the Spurs ground, because it was the first time I'd been for a football match. But in the end, I was really, really disappointed, because we could have got so much more out of it. Spurs were there for the taking, but we didn't take them. And we didn't respond to the decisions, as I've said earlier, that they made and were capable of making. And we came away with a... I mean, walking out of the ground and looking at the Forest fans, they just looked dismayed. There was sort of just real disappointment and sadness. It was like... I mean, I've seen it in seasons before when we've been relegated. There was that sort of look on the fans' faces of, this is how it's going to go, isn't it? What on earth do we do about it? Which is horrible, you know? Sorry to bring that picture of optimism.
That's going to say, Steve. I'm normally relying on you to be Mr. Optimistic on it.
The optimism, Max, is, you know, we've got a better goal difference than Luton, and if we can't get one more point than Luton in the next six games, we don't deserve to be in the league anyway.
I completely agree.
And that's before there's an announcement this week about how many points Everton are going to get docked again, and Crystal Palace can't win, Brentford can hardly win. You know, we're not out of it in the slightest, but there's got to be some more really good Fulham type performances in the next six games.
Yeah, it's going to go right down to the wire. It's going to go right down to the wire. I can see it being a last.
It's going to be horrible.
Yeah, it's going to be. It's not. It won't be like Crystal Palace, where it was like a party at Palace and fancy dress. Did you do fancy dress?
Yeah, you won't
be
there in your sunshine safari Hawaii shirts, will you, Max?
Yeah, exactly. See, I went fancy dress, and I don't think you did. You let the side down. If Forest secure survival by Burnley, then I promise to wear something more fun for that last game. There you go, I've said it now, and it's on video. Clip it up, put it on social media. This comment live on YouTube, Dan says, Steve has nailed it. No leaders on the pitch after that second goal went in. Heads went down immediately. Not one player looking to get the team going again. Players just stood around looking at each other. Joe says, exactly what I said, Steve, about the armband. And then Williams went off. There was no one again. I never expected them to win. Jack says, give Sells the armband. It's not a bad shout. Yeah. Some excellent saves from him yesterday. What a keeper he's becoming. Well, I think, in fact, that's maybe an overstatement. What a solid keeper he's becoming. And I think it's done Forest wonders and stopped a lot of goals, shall we say. But we won't get into the keeper situation. Want to stick on a little bit of the leadership point there, particularly Dan's comment, Sarah. And it is an interesting one, isn't it? I think I've kind of talked about on a lot of podcasts about the last six games for Forest now. These are cup finals. We all know what we've got ourselves in for and the club has. And you need leaders like that. And when players like Ryan Yates does go off, whether you agree with his performance or not, Forest are massively lacking that level of leadership. And you need players like that that know what it means for the football club to be in the Premier League, show the passion, show the commitment and the enthusiasm to try and keep the football club, to simply put it, still in the Premier League come the end of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. That leadership is so important, not just on the pitch, but off it as well in the dressing room. It's having a group of players that know how to see out those moments, that can get everybody going, that can keep calm, cool heads when you need it, that can give that little bit of something that you need. Forest do have some of those players. Yates is one, Gibbs White is one. Willie Bolly, obviously injured at the moment. Matt Sells probably comes into that as well now, albeit he only arrived in January, so you can kind of see why that the armband didn't go in his direction. I think what is really important from Sunday is, and from Tuesday as well, is that Tuesday was so good, the performance was so impressive, that the spirit was really high and the confidence was really high, and I guess it's important, it's such a cliche, but not to get too carried away with that, but then not to get too downhearted with Sunday, because it was against Spurs, because there was some really good bits in there as well. It's all about finding consistency. If Forest can go into these last few games and play to the level that they did against Fulham and the level that they showed in that first half on Sunday, there's every chance that they can pick up a good amount of points. There's games there that are there for the taking, games against teams in and around them. I guess the problem that they've had earlier in the season is that those kind of games, they haven't won. And then you're relying on the likes of the Spurs game or the Man City game at home to get something from, and the pressure's on those kind of matches then. So what's really going to be telling in this final running is what happens against Wolves this weekend, what happens away to Everton and Sheffield United, and God forbid it goes right to the end against Burnley. But that's what's important is the reaction to Sunday. It was against Spurs, put it to bed, forget about it. But there's got to be a reaction, and there's got to be a similar Fulham level performance when Wolves go to the City Ground this weekend. I'd like to think that Forest have got it within them to do that. They've got the players within them to do that. They've got quality in that side. We talked about the forward players and the threat that they can have. I still think that partnership of Omar Bamadeli and Murillo at the back is a really promising one. Yeah. I'd definitely bring Bolly back in, though, if he's fit for the weekend. Hopefully he is. Not just because of his height and his physicality, but also, as we mentioned, that leadership. He's experienced, an old head, has been there, done that. I just think he adds a little bit extra. Saturday is a really big game, I think. It's so important to get back to playing the way they did against Fulham. It's six games to go now, and it's so tight down there. But go on a run, get the momentum back. Mm. Who knows? I do think it's going to go down to the wire, but I think...
You sound like you're trying to persuade yourself, Sarah.
Well, I am, yeah. I'm trying to convince myself that it's going to be okay.
Well, Steve, actually, just before, kind of a few final points, and I want to touch on Chris Wood before we go. What a player. But I just want to touch on Sarah's point there. I've actually been easy with my questions to you today, Steve, so I'm going to throw a difficult one at you. Do you think Forest will get relegated? Can you see Forest surviving out of the next six games, to put it bluntly?
Well, let's go through the six games, right? We have to beat Wolves at home on Saturday. And I'm not normally one to say we have to do something, but we have to beat Wolves at home on Saturday. Yeah. Because after that, we've got what? And I'll get the order wrong, but, you know, Sheffield, what's the next
we've
one?
Got Everton
away.
Everton after Wolves.
Yeah, so the PSR derby. So that's a sort of game where a point might suit both of us, but whoever, if somebody loses that game, then they're in real trouble because the winners will almost sort of think that they're safe. So there's real pressure on that game. Then there's what? Man City at home. That's a nice, easy fixture.
We've got Chris Wood. It'll be all right.
Well, yeah, but but let's assume, you know, that we're going to get nothing out of Man City. Then Sheffield United away. Well, Sheffield United may be down by then, but they'll want nothing more than to put one over on us and drag us down. And it's at Bramall Lane, which is a horrible place to go to. Chelsea at home is winnable because you never know which Chelsea are going to turn up. And by that stage, they won't be able to get into the Champions League. They may not even be able to get into Europe. And then it'll probably come down to Burnley away on the last day of the season where we'll all be, you know, you won't know what to wear, Max, because you won't know whether to wear a football shirt or your party gear. And we'll all be tuned into phones and everything else going, what are Luton doing? What are Everton doing? What are Brentford doing? I mean, it's going to be horrible. So I can't answer the question as forthrightly as I would like to and you would expect me to, because I just think there's so many factors. And you know, let's give credit to Luton. Luton are doing what we did last year. They're battling. They've got a style of play. They're sticking with it. And they're pinching the odd goal here and there. And they're making it work for them. And Kenilworth Road is turned into not quite a fortress, but, you know, they're picking up loads of points. And all, you know, I hate to say it, but all credit to them. But we just shouldn't be in this position. We've got 11, 14, probably 18 good players who ought to by now be a really good team. We're much better than where we currently sit. Yeah, there's a 4-point deduction in there, but we're much better than where we currently sit. But the sum of the parts somehow isn't. And for me, that comes back, I'm sorry, but it comes back to the leadership of that group. You know, I was thinking last night as I was coming back on the train, we've lost something, and I hate to say it, but think of the way that Ange Postecoglou speaks and talks. Think of how the way Klopp speaks and talks, and I'm not drawing that sort of necessary comparison. We had something really special under Steve Cooper. Something had to change, but there was that unity. And I just don't see that there is that unity. There isn't that leadership. There isn't something for us all to go, that person, we can all gather around and believe in that individual, and that person's going to get us out of the mess. that person at the moment is probably Morgan Gibbs-White. But to put that amount of pressure on a single player is really daunting. So I'll see you at Burnley in wearing, you know, you'll be wearing a Hawaii shirt over the top of your Forest shirt and not know which one to, you know, to display until the full time whistle. And let's hope it's the Hawaii shirt and we're all singing Waka Waka.
Exactly. I think Steve. I think that ends us nicely. I was going to touch on some more points, but I think we've covered stuff and I know we're a bit tight for time this morning. Huge game against Wolves. I think we've got to win it, and I think it's a must win. If we don't, then I don't think the Hawaiian shirt will be getting a look in this season. It's a bit like, I was just going to say, it's a bit like some Forest players this season, the Hawaiian shirt. You buy it and then they just don't really show up. That's another topic of conversation though. Right, that'll do us nicely. Thanks for all the comments this morning live on Facebook and YouTube. Sarah, Steve, thank you. I was going to say enjoy the rest of the day, but you might be both tired after a late night last night. So maybe get some sleep. Maybe go back to bed like a classic uni student.
I wish.
Yeah, I wish.
Enjoy both. Enjoy. Fingers crossed Forest get a result against Wolves next Saturday. We'll be back this week with a Q&A and a preview and all the usual stuff. But until then, keep the faith. Fingers crossed we'll be all right. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.